Hi, everybody. During the months of March and April, we are highlighting the work of Rios to Rivers in our community effort to showcase organizations who are working towards social justice, environmental action, and more inclusive public lands.
Rios to Rivers inspires the protection of rivers worldwide by investing in underserved and indigenous youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and support them in their development as the next generation of environmental stewards.
Founded in 2012, Rios to Rivers programs have connected 234 underserved and indigenous students from 20 endangered river basins in 7 countries. The programs have included students and community leaders from 21 indigenous nations.
Rios to Rivers envisions a world in which youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and tribal communities are equipped to become the next generation of passionate leaders for healthy rivers and communities.
Make monthly charitable giving a trend in your life in 2024 and help to support Rios to Rivers this March and April. Visit the link in our Instagram bio for more information.
So we have had some very interesting Airbnb experiences.
We've had many, yes.
We have. We've had from the highs, which I would say one of the best experiences we had was with new family member Karen.
Yep. In Black Canyon.
In Black Canyon, in Montrose, PA. I mean, in Montrose.
Colorado.
Colorado. Montrose, Colorado. And then we've definitely had some very interesting Airbnb experiences, like our plastic bed sheets, Belle's ball gown, and striped walls.
And striped walls.
Empty wine bottles.
In Akron, Ohio.
So, you know, we've definitely run, I feel like, the gamut of Airbnbs. But yes. I would have to say for the most part, whenever we've stayed in Airbnb, everything is great. Like, yeah. I mean, despite the plastic sheets and everything, the place was still clean. You know what I mean?
Like, it was clean.
It just was to, like, you know, experience that.
Yeah.
What have been some of your favorite experiences in our travels when it's come to?
Well, I think the best one ever was Savannah, Georgia.
Oh. We talk about that in
Florida Trail Mix. That one, if you haven't listened
Watch the skeleton key.
That is, it was a skeleton key situation. Mm-hmm. The host was this older gay couple in this like house, gigantic house full of secrets. That was my most memorable. What about for you?
One that I really liked was the one that we stayed at in Bangor, Maine, which like was its like own separate entrance to an upstairs apartment that had a big living room, a kitchen, and a nice bedroom. The best water pressure.
And the best water
the
pressure.
The best freaking water pressure ever. And like a claw-footed tub. And it just was like really nice and kind of like we were in Bangor, but like not right downtown. So it was like we walked to breakfast that one. It was good. That was a good one. I really enjoyed that one.
I liked it too.
Then there are the ones that aren't so great.
Then there are the ones that are just, you know, a little left of center. Like it's like, I totally get strange and I totally get quirk. We do try to stay in spaces when we know that we'll have more private space to ourselves versus having to share so much. And we did have that in this place that we stayed in Cortez, Colorado.
We had a mix of things in Cortez.
Well, we had a mix of things.
I don't know that I would say that we had that.
Well, we did have a room to ourselves a bathroom to ourselves.
We did.
That were upstairs, away from everything.
Right. First of all, the host was very nice. He was a great guy. Cortez was also sort of like a one-horse town when it came to trying to find like an Airbnb.
So it
was really difficult to like... I remember just scouring to try to find anything near there that was like easy. Even like, I think we looked for hotels and they were either like crazy priced or just far away.
They were far. We were like, we think he has children.
Adult children.
Because we saw them in photographs that were
from the 80s. Like they were like the same age as us probably, or maybe a little younger.
I'm always curious when like there's just like a ton of cars parked in a driveway, and there were a number of cars parked in this driveway when we arrived. And he's like, oh yeah, you're the only Airbnb guest. And we were like, okay. He's like, yeah, over there, I have a roommate. Or I rent out that guest
part of the house,
house or that this other side of the house that we could not access,
right?
Because it was big, but there was this whole other section. I guess he turned it into like a two-family. And he said a teacher lives there, and then
his lady was there.
No,
or his lady was coming.
No,
over.
She was coming over.
Right.
Yeah, and we were like, so, because I don't think he gave us a key. That was why.
Oh, he's like, I'll be home most days.
He was like, yeah. I'm always here.
And yeah, and if I'm not here, my roommate's here.
You know, yeah, that's somebody. Kind of, so yeah. He's like, the door is just always open.
Yeah,
which is always a little weird. Yeah. But it is what it is.
Yeah.
And then he was like, yeah. And then later, my girlfriend's coming over around 9:30. We're like, all right, great,
great,
great. But then it was like, you know, I like he said like we could use the kitchen whenever we wanted to. But it was like, well, if his girlfriend and him are watching TV downstairs like right in the there. Living room. Yeah. We can't really go into the kitchen.
Yeah.
I don't really want to go into, you know.
That's like the first time I feel like we've been in an Airbnb situation where I really felt like we were truly guests in someone's home as like opposed to like paying guests. You know what I mean? It almost felt like I was not an inconvenience, but like an afterthought sort of. Oh, like that's what it sort of thought. Like. And I, listen, that's what you're renting your house on Airbnb. I get it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those spaces come with different quirks and different things. So.
And different, yeah.
But
different aspects for different folks.
That's not how the rhyme goes, but we'll go with it.
Looking for adventure, I want to follow on the trail, or get a little lost and let the wind fill my sails. Get up when the stars still fill the sky, don't wake the sun. There's so much to be done, and the day has just begun. Go where the postcards are real, you can feel, you can open your eyes and open your heart when you gaze at the national parks.
Follow you, I'll follow you there.
At the national parks.
Follow you, I'll follow you there.
At the national parks.
Follow you, I'll follow you there.
Follow you, I'll follow you there.
We would like to start this episode by recognizing that while hiking in Mesa Verde National Park, that we were on the traditional and stolen lands of the Ute and Pueblo people.
After hiking the Point Lookout Trail, we went and had dinner in town at a local place and then found the Airbnb, met the host, found the room, and then we immediately were just like, I'm laying here and I'm doing nothing.
Yeah.
We were very tired. Then we sort of made a plan for the following day.
Mm-hmm.
We went to sleep and we got up very early and we headed over to hike this trail called Canyon of the Ancients.
Right.
Which is part of a place called Canyon of the Ancients.
Right. It was the Sand Creek Trailhead. And that is something we're going to talk a little bit more about in a Trail Mix episode, because it is a site that's right near Mesa Verde and it's totally worth doing. But we're going to leave that for a future conversation. We knew that we had a 2 o'clock ticket time to see Cliff Palace. So we knew we also had some time in the morning to do some things offsite, which is why we went to do that hike. But we also knew that there were some things that we definitely wanted to see at Mesa Verde. After leaving that hike, we headed down County Road G to the entrance station, which is right off of 160. Like we said in our last episode, we had already purchased our tickets for Cliff Palace, which is something
you can only do there and in person.
And something we definitely recommend planning for multiple days at Mesa Verde, depending on the peak times of the season. Definitely something to consider for your trip, as opposed to just like showing up and hoping there'll be some that day, because it's probably not going to be the case.
Probably not.
We were really trying to figure out like what we wanted to do when we were in the park during that time. And there was another hike that was possible to do that the ranger had mentioned to us, and that hike was the Petroglyph Trail. So in order to do that, we had to do some more driving.
That's right. We had earmarked that trail as something that we wanted to do. We started by driving in, and we went to the Chapin Mesa Archaeology Museum, which is right near Spruce Treehouse and Cliff Palace. I had seen this. They had talked about it. I was like, I really, really think we should prioritize going to this museum. I really want to see what is there. So we spent some time wandering through this museum, and I really loved it. It's extremely educational. It tells the story of the Ute people, the Pueblo people. It contains and preserves a lot of the artifacts. It also contains like a ton of artwork that was created during that time. Also new artwork by various resident artists.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I love museums, don't get me wrong, but like when there's hiking involved, I'm just like ready to hit the trails. Yeah, I know, right? Color me shocked. But I do feel like this is the one museum where we had the time to really like meander a little bit. And I really took the time to look at each of the exhibit cases. And it's clear some of these exhibits have been in place for a very long time. We actually even sat in the movie theater to watch the movie about
Mesa
Verde.
Something you never let me do.
I know. I was feeling generous this you day. I was feeling just like showering generous. You with gifts. But I remember the movie theater feeling very old. Like it was, it also was kind of built in this sort of almost like a Spanish style of architecture. I feel like the museum itself like had that sort of flair to it.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of cases that had different flora from the area, different fauna, so taxidermied animals. There was a lot of information on their artistry, which I just was like glued to and fascinated by. Their ceramics, their weaving. They really had a lot to kind of appreciate. It was very different from the visitor center, which was gleaming and brand new. This had a lot of love to it. It was very clear. But it was very old. So it was definitely like a really sharp contrast between the two, which was interesting. But we did spend, I think, probably the most amount of time we've spent in like a visitor center museum space there. We did our Canyon of the Ancients hike in the morning and then really wanted to make sure we had time to do the museum and this hike before we had to be at Cliff Palace, which you have to be at Cliff Palace on time. So it was really important. The ranger told us, you know, kind of a big idea of how long it would take to do Petroglyphs Trail when we talked to him the day prior. So we kind of had a good idea of what we were walking into. So I think we did come back into the museum after we did that trail because we did like a gift shop run then and we like looked through there because they had a pretty nice gift shop there too. Yeah. And I think you were also still lusting after those books and you were like, oh, maybe there's different books here.
There were. There were. I looked through all of them.
One of the other things we found out too, which I was unaware of, is about the artist in residency program.
Yes.
So different national parks have artist in residence that come to the parks and create artwork about them. Dusty had mentioned seeing older paintings and newer paintings, and some of those newer paintings were by different resident artists that were there in years prior. So that was really cool to see because I don't think I'd seen that in another national park.
No, and I know that they exist. It was nice to see them in a gallery. You know, there was like room and they were incorporated like throughout the entire thing.
Yeah.
So, and I know that not every national park has a museum.
Right.
This was not only a history museum, this was also an art museum.
Yeah. It was a real lovely treat. And it's definitely something that, especially if you're going to go to Spruce Tree House or if you're going to get tickets to see Cliff Palace, it's definitely something that I think the both of us would recommend and really recommend spending the time to do. So the nice thing about it is that it is literally sort of at the top of the path, which would lead you down to Spruce Tree House and the trail for Petroglyph Trail.
Right, which is where we headed next. And with that, let's take our first break. Hey everybody, we are actively planning our hiking for this year, and so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about, we're marking them up, and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them, and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon Travel Guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon Travel Guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon Travel Guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners.
It's time for one of our favorite games.
That is one letter change.
That's right. Now, let's talk about some trash rules that you dropped on me this summer. You're like, well, you know, that means you can add a letter or remove a letter, too.
Okay, and I'm for the record,
trash.
I presented that to you, and you were like, yeah, I like that.
No.
Okay, fine.
That is false.
And you agreed to those
That's
rules.
False. No.
And then I created a category and used them, and you were like, you can't do that. That's not a change.
This is falsehoods.
That's an addition or subtraction.
Falsehoods.
No, it's not. I make up stories all the time. I'm not making up lies, fairy tales, and fallacies right now.
It's a rule book.
No.
Great. Well, I didn't do any of that.
I didn't either.
Great, because your rules are trash.
Well, you just don't remember agreeing to them.
Mm-hmm. All right, great. Let's do this. We've got, I think, 3 clues for one another.
Yep.
Great. Would you like to begin?
Sure. This is what you might say out loud while crocheting. The tools that you're working with don't do exactly what you want them to do.
Bitch, stitch.
That's not what I thought, okay. But I'll take it.
Would it be hook something? Not a
no,
hook.
No. Think about
needle?
The other thing that you're working with other than the hook.
Yarn? Darn yarn.
Yep, there you go.
Bitch stitch.
I like that though.
Okay, this would be some garbage that's really rude and abrasive.
Brash trash.
That's right. That's what you are. You're some brash trash.
This is the air that comes out of this venomous snake's mouth, and it has hinged fangs.
Is it? Well, this could be an asp gasp if you added the letter.
True.
Yeah, but it's
but
not.
But it's not that.
Because you didn't do that. You told me that.
Because you threw a fit last time.
I did. It's not a cobra, is it?
No.
No.
They are often very fast.
Oh, God. That's like a nightmare.
Yep.
I don't know. What's the snake?
What is viper vapor?
Viper vapor. If you had to bus tables and serve food at an event with a bunch of other people, that's like from midnight to 3 a.m., you might be doing this.
Well, it's really dark. It's like the witching hour, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does that have anything
no,
to do with it?
No, it doesn't. You're doing it with a bunch of other people. It's an
catering?
Event.
Catering?
You've got part, that's part of the word.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So
you've
it's
gone
like
a little too far.
Midnight cater. Cater waiter.
If you're doing it between midnight and 3 a.m., you're doing
later cater.
You're doing a later cater.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
This is an antibacterial agent that you might use to cleanse your hands if it were made out of cream of mushroom.
What is soup goop?
No.
Oh. Goop.
What is it? What is an antibacterial agent used to clean your hands?
Aloe.
No.
Sanitizer. Alcohol.
Oh my God. Or your body or your face or
what
your
is
hair.
Soap? What is soap soup?
Thank you. Soup soap. honey.
This is a puzzle that ties your head into a knot by using 3 strands.
3 strands?
Yeah.
Is mind one of the words? Brain?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A brain.
If you tie it into a knot using 3 strands, what would that be?
Oh. A brain braid.
There you go. I couldn't figure out how to like give the clue for brain without saying brain.
Yeah, I
guess I could have
so.
Said mind. Stitch, bitch!
Right on the other side of the museum, you're basically on the path that will bring you to the Petroglyph Trail, and it faces the Spruce Tree House. They often say, like, make sure you go outside, walk down, and look out so that you can see it. In Mesa Verde, all of these dwellings are inside of cliffs. They are built underneath a cliff's edge. So tell us a little bit about Spruce Tree House, Mike.
Spruce Tree House is the third largest cliff dwelling. Cliff Palace and Longhouse, which we did not go to, are larger. And it was constructed about 1211 to 1278 CE by the ancestors of the Pueblo peoples of the Southwest. The dwellings contain about 130 rooms and 8 kivas, which are also known as ceremonial chambers, and they're built into a natural alcove measuring 216 feet at its greatest width and 89 feet at its greatest depth. And it's thought to have been the home for about 60 to 80 people. And that information comes directly from NPS. The Spruce Tree House was opened for visitation following excavation in 1908 by Dr. Jesse Walter Fuchs of the Smithsonian Institute. He removed the debris of fallen walls and roofs and stabilized the remaining walls that were there.
Spruce Tree House was closed, as in you couldn't take a tour of it in the way that you could, say, Cliff Palace. But we could see it. You basically had to position yourself right in the right spot on the other side of that museum while you were starting to enter, you know, where you needed to be for the Petroglyph Trail. And from there, you could really see what it looked like right inside of that cliff. This is one of my favorite things about Mesa Verde, is being able to get up close and see all of the homes and dwelling spaces that the indigenous people of this area had created.
The really cool thing about Spruce Tree House is it is visible from afar. And it does look like this kind of giant scar on the rock. It gets narrow at one end and it narrows at the other. There's a wider section in the middle. You can see a lot of what there is to offer. It's still very far away when you're on the path by the museum, but even as you're hiking down on the trail to head towards the Petroglyphs Trail, it is something that is still visible through the tree line and things like that. The reason that it's closed, there's a natural sandstone arch that's present in the Spruce Tree House alcove, and it's just above the cliff dwelling. Again, this is just directly from NPS. Early stabilization work was performed in the 1940s, and additional stabilization work was completed in the 1960s. However, natural erosion processes, including the settling of the arch, have been affected by the early stabilization work. So modern engineering techniques may be necessary to ensure to continue the stability of the arch. In 2015, there was a rock fall, and that put a kibosh on any sort of touring to happen there, because Spruce Tree House, it was a self-guided tour, so you didn't need a ticket for it. You would be able to walk right over to it, which, as we were headed down the trail, there is a juncture that you would hit very soon after you started to descend onto the trail towards the Petroglyphs Trail that becomes a giant loop that you could have gone on that would have taken you and looped you right under that sandstone alcove, basically, and you'd be able to go right up to most of the structure there. So unfortunately, that was closed and we just had our views from afar. But like Dusty said, being able to see those spaces, even though they were distant, it's impressive. It's really just to see what was possible and to see that the space was used and was important for fortification as well as for livability and survivability. It's clear how innovative the ancient Pueblo people were when it came to what they did at Mesa Verde, because this is not the only instance, and we will obviously be seeing more of these sites. So it's clear that this is just one of many, and one of many of their innovations.
So after seeing Spruce House, it was time to make our way toward the Petroglyph Trail. You have to come down some sort of like steep, pretty steep.
Like macadam. It's like a blacktop, basically.
Yeah. The Petroglyphs Trail is technically a loop.
Yeah.
And so like you could get to the Petroglyphs the other direction without going down that steep
pitch. That's true.
As we were making our way down there, you get to a fork that says, you know, the Petroglyph Trail is to the left, or you could go to the Spruce Canyon, which is to the right. So we headed off to the left, and it took us up a bunch of stairs. You're like curving around to the outside, and you're going to the other side of where Spruce Tree House was. The sort of way this trail works is that you follow along the edge of that for a little while.
Yeah.
But in order to make our way up to the petroglyphs trail, we had to walk up those stairs, and then it brought us through a bunch of very large boulders. With that, let's take our next break. Hey everybody, we are actively planning our hiking for this year, and so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about, we're marking them up, and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them, and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon travel guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon travel guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon travel guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners. Time for Drag Corner. Please welcome to the stage
Frida Lays.
We came up, I mean, she's been on the list a while, but did we come up with this name while in Mesa Verde?
I'm pretty sure I scoured our names from that time because we
is
will
Frida Mind nearby?
No, Frida Mind is recent.
She's more recent.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Just the with Frida Charge.
And Frida Charge, yeah. She's on there too.
Yeah, Frida Lays. Frida Lays. Let's talk about those twisty freaking Frida Lays.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's reveal a secret. And is that it? Is this. If Mike is disappointed about something, if it's like, oh, we weren't able to get this thing or we weren't able to go here, then that is code for me to go into a store. Mm-hmm. And buy honey barbecue Frito twists. Ugh. And then suddenly things are better.
The world is bright again.
The world is bright again.
So I think Frida Lays probably was like a byproduct of this at some point.
Yes.
In Mesa Verde. Like my disappointment about everything.
well, that's, just like that's more boiled just over. A constant.
Right. It is a constant. So who is Frida Lays?
Frida Lays. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we have a few ways we could go here, right? I feel like
I feel like her last name should be L-A-Z.
I like lounges. That too. I like that. I like that.
Frida Lays.
Yeah. I was going to say you could also go L-E-I-S and she could be Hawaiian if you wanted to. Frida Lays. I don't like want her to necessarily be like a potato chip queen. I feel like a potato chip queen would be. And now I want to know, what is a potato chip queen?
That's a good question.
I feel like a potato chip queen would be like a drag queen that like you get. She's like a side of potato chips. It's like crispy, comfort.
Salty. Yeah.
That's a potato chip queen.
Sure.
Dependable. You always know if potato chips are involved. It's like, all right,
and
well,
airy,
at least there's that.
Because, you know, there's so much air in the bag.
Oh, yeah. There's always so much air
signs.
In the bag. mixed metaphors now.
Yep, just going for it. So, yeah, who's Frida Lays? I mean, I do feel like she has a lust for life. She is sort of this larger than life fill a room. I mean, isn't that most drag queens? But like she is 100% over the top, like at all times. There's like never a dull moment with Frida Lays.
I feel like she has gigantic hair. Like her hair is always huge.
Yeah. like bouffants for days.
Yes, huge. Mm-hmm.
And I also feel like her wig colors are not natural hair colors.
No, they're like neon, yeah. Vibrant. Mm-hmm.
And her outfits match that. Like, great. It's like I'm a Katy Perry music video.
She's like, and so there's something bright, something circus, something... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like she would be like a host. Like if you were going to see a drag show,
yeah,
she would be the MC mm-hmm. all night, and like mm-hmm. her outfit would change every time.
Oh yeah,
right.
It'd be like Kirstie Alley and Drop Dead Gorgeous. She'd always have a different like ball
always
gown on,
have a different,
but it
ball
would be
gown.
The same cut of the gown. It would just be a different color.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
And can you believe it? They still fit. Yeah, we're just all over the place.
How
now.
Many Drop Dead Gorgeous references can we make in a single season?
I feel like she sings Let's Get Live.
Oh, interesting. I was also, I think, just thinking.
Right, is that the title
Free
of that
mind,
song?
Like Free Your Mind. Mm-hmm. She would also do that song.
That's the
Free Your Mind.
Is that the title of that song? Let's Get Live. Is it? Is I that? Think it, no.
I think it's Let's Get Loud.
Is it Let's Get Loud? Yeah, I think you're right.
Right. By J-Lo? Is that what you're talking about?
Is it J-Lo? This is like a revoking of my gay card right now.
No, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, J-Lo, Let's Get Loud.
Yeah. Okay. Sometimes I don't hear the things.
That's like, okay.
You know? Concrete jungle where wet dreams are made.
Concrete bunghole where dreams are made up.
Nothing you can do.
Right. I mean, right. That's what you thought.
Like, or I'll become your wet dream tomato. That's what it is.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. was, yeah.
Yeah, Rihanna.
Which is why you thought that Carly Rae Jepsen song was about a collie baby for so long.
Right.
Like, because you were just a fan of Lassie.
That's true.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so she's like a big giant host queen. She's got lots of beautiful outfits that are gigantic.
And like and larger chunky than jewelry. Life.
Big chunky jewelry. She is just over the top yeah. in all ways.
Yes. Yeah.
Just like potato chips.
Please welcome to the stage, Frida Lays.
After we'd made our way up to the beginning of the Petroglyphs Trail, the first section is really a bunch of narrow rocks. It was kind of fun because we were like, I guess this is the way we have to go. Because there were some people ahead of us and behind us. And like we could see them headed through these narrow rocks. And we were like, well, I guess this is what we're doing.
Yeah, I don't think we really had a gauge to kind of know what it was going to be like, other than at some point we were going to see petroglyphs, and that's all we knew. We didn't even really have any sort of picture in mind of
and
what that would be.
It was a 2.5 mile trail,
mm-hmm.
and we were like, all right, this isn't too bad, and it's a loop, so by the time we get to the end, we'll be back at the beginning.
Right. Look at that. Just like life.
Right. So we start making our way through all of these narrow passages. After you get through this section, that's when you start moving into sort of a more wooded area. There's a top of a cliff's edge above you,
mm-hmm.
and you are down below, hiking along the side of it on a path that was carved along the side of this mesa.
It's not that narrow. I didn't really feel like on a very thin razor edge of a trail at any point here. It's a pretty wide trail for the most part, except when you're going through narrow boulders, but all felt pretty safe. And basically you kind of, as you're hiking, you encounter a bunch of these overhangs. It's not long after the section of boulders that we sort of get to this first like overhanging section that is basically like, if you could come in with a drill and like bore along the edge of something and leave like sort of the curved edge in the rock, but have it open to the right, that's the best way that I can describe it. It sort of felt like that. Looking up at the rock that's above us, because this is more of like a pronounced overhang, the way the rock was shaped, it was these like wild three-dimensional patterns in it.
Yes.
Which must have been through water erosion and wind over time. But it was really, really neat to see.
So, to say, when you're hiking the Petroglyph Trail, keep looking up because there's really amazing stuff above
you.
Just
keep looking everywhere because there's amazing stuff like...
Yeah.
Yeah. This was a surprise trail, I think, for me.
Really?
For sure.
It was a surprise to me too.
Yeah.
Because I thought we were just going to, you know... walk a little ways out to see some petroglyphs and then come back. But to me, it felt a little bit like the Watchman Trail in Zion,
mm-hmm.
only because it's like you're along the side of a mesa. You're hiking along the side of it for a little while until you finally get to the top. There's definitely a lot more woods here than there was in Zion, but just sort of the, you know, geological construction of it felt similar to me.
Okay. As we're hiking, we kind of get very lost in the trail, in the fact that it's like extremely beautiful. The cliff is to your left, the woods are to your right, in the way that we were hiking out. And it's very dense, but it's also super shady, like the entire time, for the most part. We were in, the way the sun was, we were really in the thick of the quote unquote woods, which we weren't really in the woods, but there were a lot of trees and a lot of tree cover. So it kept us pretty cool the entire time, with the sun breaking through here and there. And the trail itself is mostly pretty flat. There are some boulders, obviously, that you have to traverse, and a little bit of loose rock in here and there. But I don't think that it was like, it wasn't too bumpy. It wasn't like an uneven trail. Like, I didn't feel like that on the way.
No, not at all. It felt very safe. And you are pretty high up in the air.
Yeah.
Even for someone who is afraid of heights, there was no concerns for me during any of that.
Mm-mm.
I really liked this trail. You have to go all the way to the very end to get to any petroglyphs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And along the way, you start to see some things. Like, there are some other overhangs, and you start to see some rock walls. That, I think, started to get me a little bit more excited about the potential of seeing grander ruins and grander archaeological sites.
Yes.
Because there were these little spots along the way where it was clear that these were maybe like outposts or something. They weren't like super well intact, but it was clear that it was a wall or a fortification of some sort that was there at some point. It's a really beautiful day. We like had a perfect day the second day in Mesa Verde. It was really sunny, but we, like I said, because we're in the tree cover, pretty much because it's mostly conifers, firs, pines, and other like spruces and things like that, we're pretty much like in like the shade for most of the day. And it's very different from, I feel like, a lot of the desert trails that we've hiked, where it's very open. It's definitely different from the Point Lookout that we'd done the day before.
Yeah.
And totally different in what the expectation was, because I was like, Point Lookout was fine. But this was really like, oh, this is like, talk about an adventure here.
It is really an adventure.
Yeah.
And you get stunning views on your right the entire time. I mean, while you're in like, what is this first half of the loop?
I feel like there are breaks, like it's a lot of trees to the right, but then you do get those like every now and again, you get a
opening
spruce
and you just
canyon
get swooping.
View.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Views over to the right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We pass a family eventually that had like some young kids. They were like, okay, it's okay. Just go ahead of us. They must have started way ahead of us, and we caught up to them. So they're like, just go beyond us. It's fine. Like, they had like a little kid on the trail. I don't know if you remember that.
I do remember. Yeah.
So they were like, just keep going. And so eventually we get to about the middle point of the trail. And basically it's the point where you're about to turn and bank up.
Yes.
To go on top of this, like
mesa
essentially.
Right.
And there are your petroglyphs.
That's where you see the
like
petroglyphs.
The trees sort of end because you start to ascend up, and there are these petroglyph panels.
Yeah.
They were really, really different from the panels that we had seen before. One thing that stood out to me is that there were several points where there were handprints, like very prominent handprints in the rock that had clearly been like chiseled out to sign that panel or to leave that mark. And that's something you see in cave paintings a lot as a signature.
There were lots of images of people, animals.
Mm-hmm.
I got a close-up photo of these two birds facing each other. Petroglyphs are so fascinating. Each panel of petroglyphs in each different space look totally different.
Right.
And they're at different sizes. And like, you know, I think I might have been expecting like this sort of giant sweeping amount of petroglyphs, but this was actually just like a tiny, not tiny, but a small concentration of petroglyphs in one area.
Mm-hmm. Even if there weren't petroglyphs, the trail itself was great. Like, this was, the petroglyphs were truly a bonus, but also like a highlight of the trail. So something to definitely like consider and think about. The wild thing is like a lot of the times with petroglyphs, you can't get that close to them, but we were very close. And I think essentially it's like
there was a sign that was like, don't touch
right.
them.
It was like, you obviously, and you, the oils on your skin can
don't touch
totally
them
damage everything ever. Those are all, you know, all things that come into play, but it's like you have to hope that people are on their best behavior and on the honor system out there, because this is literally very remote.
Very remote.
And it's interesting to see that being a point where these were, obviously this trail was not this trail hundreds or thousands of years ago, but this clearly was an important space for these petroglyphs to be.
Or this trail was a thoroughfare for yep. traffic for a specific reason.
Sure.
Traveled for function.
Right.
At that point is when you turn to go kind of straight up to get to the top of the mesa, mm-hmm. which is kind of like we'd had to do some bouldering in order to get up there.
You definitely like had to do some hands. Yeah, I guess some bouldering, some light bouldering, I would say.
Yeah, like, it wasn't like
hands on rocks,
bouldering.
Like, you know, pushing yourself up a little bit here and there. But like you could climb up without having to use your upper body strength if you needed to. It just was more for stabilization, I feel like. You kind of get this amazing view of Spruce Canyon, which I think we didn't do the Spruce Canyon trail. I don't believe that it was closed. I just think it was going to take too long. And we didn't have enough time to do that petroglyphs and Cliff House without right. running into some potential
like
time
yeah,
issue.
So yeah, that was why we decided to do the petroglyph trail, right. not the Spruce Canyon
yeah,
trail.
Yeah, and that takes you along the edge of the canyon as well, but this was like a really fantastic view looking into the canyon and seeing it was very, very green too. That's the thing, like, I do feel like Mesa Verde, obviously, Green Table, it lived up to its name.
Certainly.
Yeah.
And that was really interesting to see sort of desert-ish. I mean, it's mm-hmm. plateau,
yeah.
Colorado plateau, but it was, you know, for areas, for that area that is so close to being desert, to be sort of desert, but also green is, you know, super cool.
Yeah, it was super lush and the colors were really great. But basically, at the top, you're kind of like, oh, okay, you've made it. It's just flat rock for the most part at this point.
Flat rock.
With very, very wide open spaces for the most part. We get this great view of the canyon, and then you kind of keep hiking. There are so many fantastic views along the way, but for the most part, you're not super close to the canyon's edge or the edge of that mesa top.
You're like right set back in the center yeah. and like yeah.
Yep. And sometimes you're winding through just these like this underbrush and some trees. I do remember like kind of going through like more wooded sort of areas. Yeah. But then there are times where it's very just open.
I remember on our way back after we had gotten to the top. And we were now just headed back on the top of this flat rock. It was just like, boop, 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 boop. I mean, we were booking it.
It was very, very quick. We definitely stopped to like snack up at the top and just like sort of take in everything, because with a view like that, it's something you have to do. The one thing that, you know, I do feel like Mesa Verde was really good with so many things, but like many things in Colorado, there were very few Karens, if any.
I don't remember any sign. No. I mean, there was the sign that
there was
said
the sign,
to the Petroglyph Trail,
right.
and there was the sign that said to the
Spruce Canyon Trail. But that was about it.
That was yeah. it.
So, it that not that it was confusing, but there were some points where it was like, oh, is it this way or is it that way? Like
right toward the end yeah. is where it was a little confusing.
Yeah.
So, when you were walking along all the way back, right, you get to this point where you're like, oh, I can see the museum now.
Yeah.
And I can see down below, because you're essentially right above
Spruce Tree House.
Spruce Tree House.
Right, which
and
is
so
cool.
You're standing up there and you're like, okay, we have to get back over there. And there were a couple of small cairns that had been put in place mm-hmm. that sort of just guided you like, okay, now.
Because you had to like swing
here.
Like a wide berth basically around the bowl that was below you,
yeah.
which is where, like, before Spruce Tree House, like, the area before that right. archway. So you had to kind of do this wide swing around back to the museum. Yeah.
It spits you out right there, back at the, you know, right there at the museum.
Right at the gift shop.
Yeah, right
we
at
walked
the gift shop.
Basically right into the gift shop.
We walked right in there.
We did have some other time to kill before we needed to head to Cliff Palace. So we spent that time back in the museum hitting anything that we might have missed on the first time, including looking at more books and some gifts for friends and loved ones.
That's right. All right, let's put the petroglyphs trail of Mesa Verde on the Karen Stone scale.
For me, it's a 3.
For you, it's a 3. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm gonna say a 4.
Okay, which we is did what
this
we did
last
before.
Time too. Mm-hmm. But for those of you who may be new to the Karen Stone scale, this is our way of rating how strenuous a hike is. Yeah, I would give it a 4 just because it's like, yeah, there's those narrow rocks that you gotta, you know, get through. You know, sometimes the terrain is a little up and down, but it's not too bad.
I guess so. I think it just also seeing kids, like very young kids on the hike, I'm like, yeah, this is a hike that's doable. Like, you're right, there is some up and down, but the top part, the whole like half of the loop, which is just flat. I mean, if you really wanted to do the hike, but not deal with the bumpier sort of like slight change in elevation up and down sort of part of the hike, just hike the flat top.
Hike the flat top.
And you then just go see the petroglyphs side. And yeah. Loop back. It's still going to be about the same distance because you got to, it's like a there and back then as opposed to a loop. So, but I do think it's pretty magical to do that part like right along the edge of the, you know, the cliff. So
it is.
I recommend.
Highly recommend.
And let's end this episode with some Jeopardy-style trivia. All right, Dusty, why don't you hit us with your Jeopardy first?
Okay, are you ready?
I will try to do my best. I'm having post-trauma from our last Jeopardy episode.
You did pretty good, didn't right. you? You got 3 out of 5.
That's not all. That's
3 minutes. All right. Are you ready for my category?
I will try to be.
My category is called Windows to the Past.
Oh.
So there is a spot in Mesa Verde called Windows to the Past. Mm. We didn't get to see it because that road was closed.
Got it.
This is all about songs with the word past in them.
If I could turn back time.
Right. Now that would be a song about time travel or the past.
Right.
But this actually contains the word past in them. You're not always identifying the song.
Great.
So here we go. For 100.
Let's get live.
Right. Beyonce, can you handle this? Michelle, can you handle this? This artist, can you handle the song Past 12 that appears on her solo album, Simply Deep?
Is it Kelly?
Correct.
Roland?
Yes, yeah. Look at you.
Who is Kelly Roland?
You got it.
Texting on her spreadsheet.
Yeah. Oh my God, she was texting on the spreadsheet in that music video. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
Yeah.
Okay, for 200.
Mm-hmm.
Before becoming known for songs like Up on the Roof, You've Got a Friend, and How Sweet It Is, this guitar-playing singer-songwriter recorded the song Places in My Past.
Who is Carole King sized?
No, incorrect. Carole King wrote the song You've Got a Friend, but she gave it to this artist who sang it first.
Who's Joni Mitchell?
Oh, no.
Who is...
Oh,
sorry. Who is... geez. Fire and Rain.
Yes.
Why is... Yeah, I know. It's there. It's just not there.
James Taylor. Yes, James Taylor.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There you go. All right. For 300.
My friend Carole King.
After being discovered in a viral YouTube video receiving feedback on her music by Pharrell Williams, singer-songwriter Maggie Rogers released this titled debut album of folk pop songs.
This is a question for me, and heard it in a past life.
Look at that. You did
look
it.
At that.
And if you aren't listening to Maggie Rogers, go do so.
Get She's on
great.
It.
She's great. And for 400, Elton John's 22nd studio album is entitled This, which could also mean snoozing with the time from before.
What's sleeping with the past?
Nailed it.
Look at that.
Good work. And finally.
But he's married.
Heart, don't fail me now. Courage, don't desert me. Don't turn back now that we're here. Anya sings these words in this song from the animated film and later Broadway musical, Anastasia. Heart, don't fail me now. Courage, don't desert me.
I don't know.
Back now that we're here.
I never watched Anastasia.
You've never seen it?
Mm-mm.
Oh.
I just know there's a song that's like, have you heard? There's a rumor.
There's a rumor in St. Petersburg. Right.
Yeah. I don't know it. The way you were saying that, though, I was like, Kelly Rowland, can you handle this? You were very, like, monotone in that way.
Starting now, I'm learning fast on a journey.
To the past?
To the past.
Mm. Okay.
It's a great song. It is a great song.
I didn't realize that Enya had a part to play.
No. Enya.
Didn't you say Enya?
Her name in the story is Anya.
Oh, Anya.
The character's name is Anya.
I am really Enya, tired.
You are, girl.
I know.
Enya has like, nothing to do with
I
it.
I thought Enya was the one that like gave us that
song.
No.
It
was like...
And this character, Anastasia, in the film was... Her speaking voice was voiced by Meg Ryan.
Oh.
But her singing voice was given to us by Liz Callaway. However... You know how they always have pop songs recreate songs from musical films. Aaliyah sang Journey to the Past. Aaliyah has an amazing version of Journey to the Past too.
Well, so, thank you for that.
Rest in peace, Aaliyah.
Yes. So now it's time for My Jeopardy, and it's called Do You Want to Build a Tree House? And cover it with leaves. So this is about Spruce Tree House. This is where I took my inspiration from. And this is all about tree houses in films and television. So I'm going to describe a tree house and you have to tell me what film or television show it is from.
I'm ready.
Great. The treehouse on this television show is synonymous with their Halloween episodes titled Treehouse of Horrors, but is also one of the main hangouts for this main character and his friend Milhouse.
I have no idea.
It's an animated show. Ooh, this was my softball clue.
Oh, God. I don't know. Charlie Brown?
No. They're animated and they're yellow.
No? No.
It's The Simpsons.
Nope, never watched it.
Oh, well.
Oh, you never saw Anastasia. So there we go. So, guess we're even.
All right. Mm-hmm. All right, for 200. In this film, the main character goes to a sleepover with his newly minted friends in a treehouse which overlooks the yard of their nemesis. It's here he learns of their enemy's dark past as well as how to make a classic campfire treat.
Does he make s'mores?
Mm-hmm. In this film about baseball and friendship,
is it the main Sandlot?
There you go.
Okay, there we go. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Let's augment the clues. Okay, for 300. Richard Tyler is a pessimistic boy who is frightened of most things. After being sent on an errand by his father, played by Ed Begley Jr., to get nails to help finish the treehouse they are building, he gets caught in a storm which forces him into the library and subsequently into a world of animated adventure in this film.
What is The Pagemaster?
That's correct.
That was a great movie.
Christopher Lloyd.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Mm-hmm. I forget who the other books were played by. Just Whoopi.
But I was just like, oh, so they just took the hyenas from Lion King and put them in Pagemaster.
No.
I know. I mean, Whoopi was in both.
And, you know, you had Macaulay Culkin as like, you know, post Home Alone, I think.
I know.
For 400. In an establishing scene in this film, which shows the villainy and trickery of their adversaries who have purple eyes, this main yet small in stature character uses his treehouse as an escape from a woman who offers him both a snake and a candy bar.
Oh, I definitely know this. And this is What Is the Witches.
That's correct. She can't hear you. He screams grandma over and over again.
God, that movie. That was so scary. Mm. That was how my mom was like, and that's why you don't talk to strangers because they could be witches who could offer you snakes.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want that? I was like, I don't want that. Mm-hmm. She's like, well, then don't.
Mm-hmm. And that's why you are the way you are today. I'm afraid.
You know, yeah, afraid.
Afraid. All right. And for 500, in this insane film about dark forces, cults, and calling forth of a king of hell to the living plane, this family's treehouse is where all of the final action of the film takes place, replete with an altar and the aforementioned cult members.
Okay. I know this because we saw this movie in Maine, mm-hmm. and it was terrifying, and we both had to go to Applebee's and talk about it afterwards.
We did. And which like is, have comfort, like
have comfort food and feel better mm-hmm. about our, you know, the fact that we
were in the middle of nowhere, Maine,
and at least had each other.
Yeah.
What is Hereditary?
That's right. Look at that.
God, that movie was frightening.
Do you want to build a tree house?
Well, there you go.
There you go.
This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created and is hosted by Dustin Ballard and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to learn more about Mesa Verde and the other parks talked about on the show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram and on our website is by Michael Ryan.
All original music was written by Dave Seaman and performed by Dave Seaman, Mariella Klinger, and Sean Sklios. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang.
This episode was edited by Dustin Ballard. We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we were on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, now known as Ocean County, New Jersey.